Brackmuir goes into boredom and investigates the humor of the subject with the help of Alfred Marx.
A bloke I know has a very low threshold of boredom, but at last he got a job that suited him, testing mattresses in a bed factory. He didn't stay, mind. He couldn't stand the way they kept waking him up for tea breaks.
I thought the vicar's sermon this morning was inspiring.
Oh, I quite agree, quite agree. As soon as he'd finished preaching, a great awakening came over the congregation. A fellow from Texas was being interviewed on television, and he was one of these chaps who was terribly boring about his possessions and wealth. And the interviewer said, what sort of a place do you have in Texas? He said, well, back in Texas, I have a ranch. I have 30,000 head of cattle. And the interviewer said, well, so that's not unusual in Texas. Many people have 30,000 head of cattle. He said, in the deep freeze? A farmer made his annual trip to a boring little market town and sold his entire year's produce. His pockets bulging with money, he wandered around the town looking for somewhere to celebrate, but it was after 8 o'clock in the evening and everyone seemed to be in bed. At last, he met a woman walking along the road. He said, excuse me, where's the nightlife for the town? I am, said the woman. The club bore walked into his club in Piccadilly one evening and grabbed one of the fellow members, who winced, and he said, I'm sorry, I don't want to be a bore, chap, and I think I ought to tell you. I haven't been feeling too well lately, and my local quack sent me off to see one of these psychiatric wallers in Harley Street, you know, these head-shrinking blokes, and he laid me on the couch, spoke to me for a half an hour, charged me 30 guineas, and told me I was in love with my umbrella. In love with my umbrella. Fond of it, yes.
Everyone at some stage in their life has been utterly, impossibly, excruciatingly bored. Sometimes it's done by external circumstance like work or being laid up in bed, missing a train. More often it's inflicted by other people. Everyone knows a lot of bores. It's one of those strange qualities, though, that doesn't work in the first person. If you decline the verb to be a bore, it goes, you are a bore, he is a bore, they are bores. You never hear, I am a bore. It's a terrible thing, actually, that the most crushing bore in the world thinks he's being very interesting. It's a blinker view, but one we all suffer from at times. Amber is Bierce's definition.
Bore, a person who talks when you wish him to listen.
La Rochefoucauld.
We often forgive those who bore us, but we cannot forgive those whom we bore.
Oliver Wendell Holmes.
All men are bores except when we want them.
H.L. Mencken.
The capacity of human beings to bore one another seems to be vastly greater than that of any other animal. Some of their most esteemed inventions have no other apparent purpose. For example, the dinner party of more than two, the epic poem, and the science of metaphysics.
But you know, bores are undaunted by such thoughts. Most continue secure in the unfounded assumption that whatever they talk about is of enormous interest to their listeners. Though in some cases, their efforts take on the stature of an art. Sir Walter Scott, who was no mean bore himself from time to time, wrote,
it requires no small talents to be a decided bore.
Let's hear now from a decided bore, Mr. E. L. Whisty.
I've been looking at my diary. It's the most boring document I've ever seen in my life. I hadn't realised what a boring life I've been leading till I read my diary. It's unbelievably boring. It's probably the most boring book in the world. It should be given to school children as an examination subject. You listened to it. You wouldn't believe it. Listen to this. Monday. Got up. Went for a walk. Had lunch. Went to lavatory. Came out again. Wrote up diary. Then the next day it reads, got up, went out, came in, went to bed. Didn't even go to the lavatory. Next day, got got up, wandered round to see Spotty Muldoon. He wasn't in. Wandered back, went to bed. It's not what you'd call exciting reading, is it? I think it's about time I started doing a few interesting things. It's time I found something out, like the secret of eternal life, the meaning of the universe, or how to get hold of women, or something. I've got a feeling I must do something important and amazing very soon. Perhaps if I grabbed hold of somebody in the government and threw them into the sea, that might be worth it. I must do something with me life. Something I'll be remembered for when I'm gone. Perhaps if I got hold of some bees and trained them to fly up people's noses. That might do some good. I could release them in the House of Commons and every year people would burn effigies of me on E.L. Whiskey night and dance round a beehive. There must be something memorable I can do before I die and leave this mortal coil on which we strut and fret our doleful ways, as Shakespeare put it, God bless him. Anyway, I've decided to go out and do something. If you read of C.P. Snow exploding in his bath, you'll know it's my work.
Peter Cook. It's not just people who are boring. Sometimes a situation can be boring. Traditionally, the country is supposed to be less stimulating than town. Here's the Reverend Sidney Smith.
I have no relish for the country. It's a kind of healthy grave.
Another thought from the gentleman on the same subject.
It's a place with only one post a day. In the country, I always fear that creation will expire before tea time.
Perhaps it's just that in the country, the whole pace of life is slower.
The sun comes up and the sun goes down. The hands on the clock keep going around. I just get up and it's time to lay down. Life gets tedious, don't it? My shoe's untied, but I don't really care. I ain't a-figuring on going nowhere. I'd have to wash and comb my hair. That's just wasted effort. Water in the well's getting lower and lower. Can't take a bath for 6 months or more. But I've heard it said, and it's true, I'm sure, that too much bathing will weaken you. I open the door, and the flies swarm in. I shut the door. I'm sweating again. I move too fast, and I crack my shin. It's just one darn thing after the other. My old brown mule, he must be sick. I jabbed him in the rump with a pin on a stick. He humped his back, but he wouldn't kick. There's something cockeyed somewhere. There's a mouse a-chawing on the pantry door. He's been at it for at least a month or more. When he gets through there, he's sure gonna be sore. There ain't a darn thing in there. Hound dog howling, he's so forlorn. The laziest dog that ever was born. He's howling cause he's a-setting on a thorn. Just too tired to move over. Tin roof leaks and the chimney leans. There's a hole in the seat of my old blue jeans. And I've et the last of them pork and beans. Just can't depend on nothing. Cow's gone dry and the hens won't lay. Fish quit biting last Saturday. Troubles pile up day by day. Now I'm getting dandruff. Grief and misery, pains and woes. debts and taxes, and so it goes. And I think I'm getting a cold in the nose. Life gets tasteless, don't it?
Peter Lind Hayes and the Stardusters. A source of boredom for all of us is officialdom, petty regulations. It's easy to imagine offices full of little men spinning red tape and producing nonsense with authority. Here are some such reports from the late 40s. First from the News Chronicle.
Acrobats have been classified as sedentary workers and are not entitled to extra bread coupons.
I suppose they fall off, they're accused of working the lump. From the National Insurance Act.
For the purpose of the part of this schedule, a person over pensionable age, not being an insured person, shall be treated as an employed person if he would be an insured person were he under pensionable age, and would be an employed person were he an insured person.
Finally, a letter from the Daily Telegraph.
Having had a leg amputated during the war, I am, as a cripple, allowed an extra ration of soap. On produce.
That's a bit illogical to start with, but accepting that, go on.
On producing a doctor's certificate to the effect that I only had one leg, I was supplied with the extra coupons. These coupons, becoming exhausted, I applied for a further supply, only to be told that I must produce a further certificate to the effect that my leg is still off.
All these regulations are the proud products of little men and officers. A lot of them are probably commuters. And for a definition of them, a little poem by E.B. White.
Commuter, one who spends his life in riding to and from his wife, a man who shaves and takes a train and then rides back to shave again.
One can, of course, break the monotony of home life by going out for the evening, but that doesn't always work. Entertainment is sometimes not as entertaining as it should be. A report from a wartime Daily Telegraph.
Ensor describes as without foundation an allegation by an actor at a British equity meeting that members of the forces have had to be locked in at its performances.
Sometimes, as you read between the lines of the entertainment pages, you get the feeling entertainment may be a misnomer. From the Star.
I admire the skill with which he sang "I Can't Give You Anything But Love, Baby" in French and made it sound like another number altogether.
From a Surrey paper.
Miss Jennings has been especially engaged for the festival and cannot be in London again before June the 9th, all of which is highly satisfactory.
Sitting through very long operas can sometimes be boring. A report from a distinguished American music critic.
Parsifal is the sort of opera which starts at 6 o'clock, and when it's been going for 4 hours, you take a look at your watch and it says 6:20.
And here's a very sweet note from a choir festival program.
To relieve the monotony of sitting, the audience are asked to rise during the rendering of the chorus, "Fixed in His Everlasting Seat."
There are some jobs which always sound boring, and among them is weather forecasting. I'm sure it's a fascinating business if you're in it, up on the Air Ministry roof, waving bits of seaweed, you know, feeling of corns. But to the outsider, weathermen always sound rather bored. Perhaps it's the voice that goes with the job, a note of resignation to the fact that half the listeners don't believe you and are longing to see you proved wrong. Though some weather reports are a bit unreliable anyway. Here's one such from an Irish paper.
Forecast for today. Winds freshening, fair at first, apart from fog. Becoming cloudy or dull, and milk with local rain or drizzle later.
And from the Monmouth, Illinois, Review Atlas.
Blizzard-like weather moved in from the southwest along about midnight last night, and those who sleep light said there were high gusts starting about midnight.
They're not slamming their car doors and roaring off up the road. Guests of course can be very boring indeed. It depends. William Dean Howells.
Some people can stay longer in an hour than others can in a week.
There was an American lady who always used to say to that sort of guest as she saw them off, "Do come again when you can stay even longer." What must be terrible is to have a job that you find really boring. I don't think working a lift can be much fun.
Going up. First floor. Knitwear, nappery, beachwear, sportswear, corsetry, millinery, ladies' underwear. Thank you. Going up. We are the lift girls in a big department store. We kindly take the patrons going up from floor to floor. Don't wonder if we're weary of standing up all day, 'cause when the doors fly open, it's our job to say, second floor. Glassware, ironware, hardware, brushware, crockery, cutlery, elf and dango tea room. Orange juice, lemonade, milkshakes, arsenic, rat poison, thank you. Going up. We are the lift girls, we're careful how we dress. I like my job, but I'd very much rather have been an air hostess. But as I was always air sick and I couldn't pass the test, I'll stand here pushing buttons and the lift does all the rest. Third floor. Cosmetics, perfumes and colognes, ribbons, handbags, shopping baskets, belts, buttons, teen and 20 dresses, thank you. Excuse me, can I find glasses on this floor? Glassware, ironware, hardware, brushware, crockery, cutlery, and finding your tea room, second floor. Now you're perhaps going down. Going up. Oh, sister Marlene, what hell of a job this is. The boss won't even give us time to go and have us is. And while we're on job, we can't even ever smoke. Oh, I'm so tired, man, I'd give anything for a Coke. Fourth floor. Kiddies wear, juvenile, children and sub-teens, teens, twin-teens, middle age, old age, senility, dotage and decomposition. Funeral shrouds, going up. Don't lean on the buttons, please, don't lean on the doors. The car's full up now, so you have to walk to the other floors. Hey, take your hands with me, who do you think you are? I made you 1,000 feet today, but I'm not going to go that far. But radio department, electrical appliances, hairdressing salon, friendly sewing school, thank you. Going up, sixth floor, offices and accounts. Offices and accounts going up. Going down. Now, if only I had a minute or two to sit down on my seat, I'm gonna sue this company for giving me flat feet. Now I've got fallen arches and lumbago in my back, and I suppose it won't be long now before I get the sack. Now if the lift gets stuck for an hour or two, you really can't blame me. I don't appear to sympathise with your anxiety, 'cause I've seen enough of these four walls to last for many a day. And when the clock says 5:30, I'm overjoyed to say, going home.
That was Jeremy Taylor. One can also get extremely restless sitting listening to lectures. A report from the Bangor, Maine Daily News.
William P. McKay gave an illustrated lecture on the romance of coffee. Tea was served by the hostess.
Another one from a Nebraska newspaper.
Dean S.P. Swenson came through sensationally in his high school talk, packing a smartly contrived 10-minute speech into 20 minutes, as this town has recently heard.
But loose package. Public speaking can be a form of torture for the listeners. Sidney Smith thought so.
He deserves to be preached to death by wild curates.
fate worse than death. Speeches can really depress one. From a Calcutta newspaper.
A very fitting end to a very wet afternoon came when Mrs. K gave away the prizes.
I think afternoons are the time that we're most prone to boredom. And in England, the worst sort is a Sunday afternoon.
What's the time?
The little hands
are... Oh, not you, somebody else.
17 minutes past two.
17 minutes? Doesn't time drag? Let's go to the pictures.
They don't open until 4:30. It's Sunday.
Well, never mind. We'll go at 4:30. What's on?
Let me see. Royal Team. Oh. Betty Davis and George Brent in Little Foxes and the Battle of Little Bighorn.
Oh, I've seen them. I've seen both of them. It's always the same on Sundays. They always put on old films you've seen before. Makes you sick. What's on at the other place?
It's closed down.
Oh, well, so much for the pictures. What time are the pubs open?
7:00.
It's even an hour later than weekdays. And they close earlier. There's no one up there Sunday nights anyway. Except the barmaid. She's a bit off. I told Ellie, you know, I went up there and I saw him. Quietly. And the bottle and jug, I got him on one side and I said, Ellie. I said, what did you get rid of Gladys for? She was a fair piece, you know. Her arms were a bit thick, but what can you expect when she's pulling pipes all day long? But this one, oh, dearie me, puts you right off beer, she does. You want to get it down quickly and get out. I told Harry straight. I said, Harry, I said, you've done wrong there getting rid of Glennis.
Mm-hmm.
There's no attraction coming in here now because your beer's rotten.
Did you tell him that?
Certainly, he didn't deny it. It's fallen right off that place.
Well, the dark club's moved down to the Bull.
So why don't he get rid of it then?
Well, I think there's something going on there. He had a black eye the other day and he's been drinking more.
Oh, that's a shame. I like old Harry.
I like Harry too. But there you are. These women, once they get hold of you, mate, there you are. That's the way it goes.
Yep.
Yes. That's life. It's always the same. There you are. Up 1 minute, down the next.
Yep.
Never know when it's your turn next. No. That's the way it goes. Never know what's round the next corner, do you?
True. No matter how bad off you are, there's always somebody worse off than yourself.
That's very true. That's very true. I was just thinking about poor old Albert in hospital. He's been there a month and nobody has been to see him.
Oh, no. All in that shot and that poor old devil.
Nobody's been near him. He's just lying there.
That makes you feel really rotten, doesn't it?
Poor old Albert.
Well, you look, why don't we go and see him this afternoon? We got nothing to do.
Oh, it's a long way, isn't it?
You and Tony Hancock, Sid James, Bill Kern, Hattie Jakes bring our programme on boredom almost to an end. We've got one last thought for you. You may be lucky and escape boredom in this life. What about the next life? As Lady Cork and Orrery said in the 18th century...
I don't relish going to heaven. All that sitting on damp clouds and singing hymns.
So next week, Alfred and I will be going into Pride. Until then, goodbye.
Bye.
Frank Muir Goes Into Boredom was produced by Simon Brett and John Lloyd.